championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside, as always, by Joe Cook. You guys are listening to the Hornscast Channel. It's the Hornscast Channel on Podbean, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and wherever you guys can find a podcast. Texas is taking on Iowa State in a matchup of 15 and 16. So we will bring in our friends from Wide Right, Natty Light, to talk to us about what Texas fans can expect out of the Iowa State Cyclones as they head to Austin. Then we will talk about the importance of Iowa State going into the future. What does this game mean for Tom Herman? What does it mean for the program? And what does it mean for the season in general? But before we get into that, Joe, you have a question for me?
So, yeah, I'm just going to throw out a resume of a head coach here. He is 35-38 since 2013. He is 19-33 in conference play. In his career as a head coach, he has had literally one bowl win. He's had a couple opportunities, but he's had one bowl win and has only been bowl eligible, you know, in these six seasons, one, two, three times. He posts great offensive numbers in his first year. Offensive S&P, he was 28, so one top 30. And then he was 19th in the next year, another top 30. And then he was number one. And then he was number six, right? And that's even with a 5-7 team. So I'm starting to give you more and more clues. 2017, offensive S&P, 25.
I feel like I know who it is.
So he's had over, and even this year, he's had over and over and over these top 30 offenses, yet he just can't win. His defensive coordinator in his, I believe, third year in his, overall in his career has never fielded a defense better than 40th, and that was only once, and every other one, he's had more bottom 30 defenses than top 50 defenses. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's Texas Tech. It's Cliff Kingsbury. That's just Texas Tech's MO, right?
Yeah, but I mean, he's not a good. I see so many people trying to stump for him. Oh, he's the next big deal. He's this offensive genius. Well, yeah, that's all well and good, but he's a pretty mediocre head coach. And I'm so curious as to why people continue to stump for him over and over and over.
Probably because of that offensive side of the ball, and if he was given a bigger brand or some better players on the defensive side of the ball who could run a defense that could keep up with the high power on the other side of the ball, perhaps he would be a better, you know, he'd have better numbers. But I see what you're saying. I mean, as a head coach, you have to be able to not only build a program with the players, but build a program with your coaching staff. And that's something I guess he hasn't really been able to do until recently with David Gibbs. And even David Gibbs is, you know, mediocre, but I think that's more a product of the other side of the ball. I think he hasn't done a great job of balancing out the high power with the other side of the ball, and that's what's killed him. And that's just been Texas, you know, weakness forever. But
they keep giving him raises too in his contract. You know, he gets paid more and more to do worse and worse.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I feel Cliff Kingsbury has the ability to be good, but he needs to learn to be a head coach and work with the other side of the ball and hire well on the other side of the ball. He needs to learn how to build staffs better than what he has right now. So he's had time to do it. He's had more time to do it than Tom Herman has, but he hasn't done it.
The next time he goes above 500 in conference will be the first time.
So on that, but speaking of conference play, let's go ahead and bring in our Iowa State guy. We always get a guy from Wide Right, Natty Light. They're friends of the show. So this year we're bringing in Jared Larson. He is the writer for Iowa State. He's a writer for Wide Right, Natty Light. He's on Twitter at jar_lar. Jared, my man, how are you doing? How's it up there in Iowa?
I'm pretty good, you know. Things are pretty nice. It was out up to 44 degrees or something today.
Oh,
almost
it's pretty
wore
hot.
Shorts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, could have suntanned almost.
Yeah. We're walking around in shorts and whatnot, only an inch of snow.
Tank tops, you know, flip-flops.
Yeah. Oh, I completely understand. Down here, it's 40s, and we're in parkas, Joe. I don't know. I didn't dare step out the house and just in case I froze my toes off. I don't know about you, Joe.
I wore shorts today. It didn't get to me quite as bad as it may have gotten to you. So
Joe is the guy who wears shorts even when it's cold and decides, no, these are my warm shorts, and refuses to wear pants. Right, Joe?
Nice.
Totally, totally Joe. But Jared here, as we said, is here to talk about Iowa State. Jared, you want to give us a little quick overview of the season so far for Iowa State? What's been going on, and how has it all changed since Brock Purdy got onto the field?
Of course. So our season started out pretty poorly, actually. We had a canceled game, which is a program that I'm looking at, due to lightning. And then we played the school out east, and that didn't go well. And our man, Kyle Kemp, who I like to call Dr. Wheels because he's been in school forever. I think he has a master's degree in, like, computer science. He went down with an MCL injury. Zeb Noland comes in, loses to TCU. And then after one drive against Oklahoma State, we throw Brock Purdy into the mix, and we win 48-42. And I know I'm omitting the Oklahoma and the Akron game, in which Zeb played pretty well. However, those are just part of the 1-3 September that we had, and we haven't lost since October, or Brocktober.
Oh, man. I mean, has it been as simple as Brock Purdy being the quarterback, or what are the other factors that have really helped that out? Is it David Montgomery being pretty consistent? What else has helped out since, obviously, Brocktober?
So Montgomery's consistency is a key thing for our offense. However, Brock Purdy's dual threat option is another good thing because Zeb Noland, he was pretty stationary in the pocket. He was a lot like the Statue of Liberty, just standing there. Looks good, but not when he's getting sacked by whatever team that we're playing.
Speaking of Brock Purdy and Zeb Noland, let's get to the offense because the defense is what's great for Iowa State. So let's go to the part where Texas could possibly match up, although they are going up against the Texas defense. But what exactly is the Iowa State offense? What are Texas fans going to see? And what is the style of offense that they play up in Ames?
So the style of offense that we play up in Ames, we like to give it to David Montgomery a lot. You Texas fans will not see him for the first half because he was ejected for fighting in the Baylor game.
Which was BS.
I was front row of the student section, and I was about to just jump the wall and just start fighting too. But kidding, because I'm 5'11", 130. But but Hakeem Butler, 6'6", Chase Allen, Charlie Kohler, tight ends that are 6'7", also good to see. Johnny Lang, you're going to see some fun running backs. Kane Nwangu is one of our speedsters. Tariq Milton. So we run a good run-pass option, but I think we'll try to open up the pass on defense, on your Texas defense. And once Montgomery comes back in the second half, we might try to open it up on the ground more.
So Matt Campbell, for all the praise that he's gotten, he's an offensive coach, right? It kind of seems that being from, you know, the heart of MAC country, from Big Ten country, I think at least my perception is I have to remind myself, like, oh, yeah, this guy's an offensive coach, right? Correct?
I mean, he played defense in college, but, I mean, to me, he does look like an offensive coach, and he is running as the OC, I believe.
So this is definitely his system, like we mentioned, the MAC-ish system, the Big Ten-like system. Texas also has a former Big Ten coordinator, Big Ten country guy, one of the guys that, you know, works for Inside Texas, side I work with, and writes on Big 12, kind of thinks, like, this is a way to punish defenses that work kind of with finesse and work more to get guys in space rather than to run over people. It's no secret that Iowa State doesn't have the talent that some of their mates in the Big 12 do. Do you think that kind of premise is true, that, you know, being able to line up and try and out physical people and run over people who aren't maybe used to that on a day in and day out basis has worked to Iowa State's advantage?
It really has. There are many instances where David Montgomery will just bowl over somebody or make a cut 5 yards before and somebody will just hit the grass. But I know we're getting pretty good on the offensive line too. I'm pretty proud of the push that they've been getting.
So let's get down to the who then. Who is Iowa State throwing in on the offense? We know Brock Purdy. We'll start off with the quarterback because everybody knows Brock Purdy. What exactly makes Brock Purdy so dynamic for this Iowa State offense?
So the Arizona Gatorade Player of the Year this high school senior season is really dynamic at throwing it deep to Hakeem Butler, which we'll cover soon, I'm sure, and making up gains on with his feet. I've seen many a touchdown so far where it's like he has a pump fake and then he'll just run in for a score, which is pretty exciting for me to see.
Yeah, he seems kind of like a guy who is very, I hate to say this because, you know, he's a white quarterback. He's a sneaky fast dude, right? Only put strap on a knee brace and he's Texas's kryptonite. But what is the strengths of his game and what are the weaknesses of Brock Purdy's game?
So the strengths I've seen, he shows elite arm strength and elite ability to maneuver around, but a big weakness is he still is just a true freshman. Like, he's 18 years old, and he will be prone to some mistakes.
You mentioned the pump fake. It sounds like, you know, it seems like that's kind of followed him around, that a reputation as having a good pump fake. Is that the case? Why has it been so successful? Is that just kind of, you know, pump fakes within the offense, or he's just proficient at it in a way other quarterbacks aren't?
I think he sells it better than our previous two quarterbacks have this season, like Kyle Kemp. I'm pretty sure one of my other writers, Levi, compared him to a 38-year-old Peyton Manning. Like, the arm is there, but the rest of the body isn't. And Zeb is just more statuesque. I know he's transferring. I hope he does well wherever he transfers, but Brock can really sell it. I really think of this Oklahoma State play where he just fakes it and then runs in for an early score.
So that's who's going to be throwing the ball. We'll talk about the guys he's throwing to. Obviously, the name that jumps out is Hakeem Butler. Not only do his just raw numbers jump out with 816 yards and 8 touchdowns, but the thing that stands out to me is, you know, he averages 22 yards a catch. That is, I mean, big playability right there, right in front of your face. How does he do that? I mean, being real tall helps, I'm sure. But, you know, how does he continually make those plays that lead up to that high average?
I'd have to think it's just attitude and effort put in through practice day to day. I know he said at the beginning of the season, just throw it up to me. Ain't nobody taller than me. So just he carries a swagger with himself now that he's a redshirt junior and he knows what he's doing and he trusts himself and he trusts Brock Purdy and Brock Purdy obviously trusts Hakeem, so it's a nice two-way street of trust.
Is it just he's tall, or is that what makes him good? Like, what is Hakeem Butler, where is he dangerous?
He's dangerous if the ball is thrown to him, because he definitely will moss somebody on Saturday.
So he's Iowa State's Colin Johnson, or Iowa State's little Jordan Humphrey?
I'd say he's closer to little Jordan Humphrey. I haven't seen that much of Texas this year. Plus, I know that Colin Johnson is dinged up, and so Hakeem isn't at this point. But yeah, I'm really interested in the receiver battle between Humphrey and Butler Saturday evening.
So just kind of looking at the, obviously the 816 yards stands out, like I mentioned, but it seems as if they spread the ball around to their receivers. I mean, you've got the four leading receivers from Butler, Deshaunte Jones, Tariq Milton, and Matt Eaton. It's, you know, only a difference of 13 receptions between Butler and Eaton. How do the other guys get involved in the offense? Because everybody knows about Butler. He's one of the, you know, 8 or 9 wide receivers in contention for first team All Big 12. What about the other guys, and who should Texas really pay attention to with, you know, what may be their second cornerback or their nickelback?
So a person I'd look out for is Tariq Milton. He and Deshaunte are both really speedy, quick guys. That's kind of obvious. Speedy and quick is the same word. But, like, if we throw to them in the flat, they'll probably burn you. Along with Landon Akers is a guy from Cedar Rapids. He's probably one of the fastest, not Kane Nwangu guys on the team. Matt Eaton, he's one of the few seniors that actually starts for the team, transferred from Temple. And He just provides consistency for us on offense.
And you said Kane Nwangu, but obviously the running back that is featured in the Iowa State offense, it has to be David Montgomery. And David Montgomery is a guy who I thought was going to have an all-time year, but he seems to be having, you know, he's having a good year, not a great year. He's obviously going to hit 1,000 yards, most likely, but he's only averaging 4.5 yards per carry, and per carry over the past three games, it hasn't been great, especially against a team like Texas Tech, where it's not terribly difficult to run against them, where he only got 3.8 yards per carry. So what is up with David Montgomery? Is he still a guy who's explosive as ever, or is there a problem beyond him, or is it David Montgomery?
So it's still David Montgomery as usual. He's like forced almost 70 missed tackles so far this season, I believe, according to Pro Football Focus. He might be having a little bit of a down year because during the first game against South Dakota State, he was dinged up, and we've had games where he didn't play, and like, I don't think he played in the TCU game. There's an early game where he didn't play, and I think he's just trying to get back to 100%. I think he's becoming more 100%, and the fact that he'll be resting the first half and then coming out for the second half could be pretty exciting to see.
Montgomery seems like a guy who you can kind of do everything with, run inside, run outside. Running inside, especially in that offense, demands a lot of physicality. But since he's not going to have him for a half, you mentioned Kane Nwangu's speed. Is he just kind of going to be a guy that try and get on the edges and in space, or can he also do the, you know, up the middle between the tackles run game?
I believe he's going to be more of a jet sweep kind of guy. He's shifty, but like not shifty enough to get from a shotgun snap to up between the guards right quick. But that's why you'll probably see a Sheldon Crony, a Johnny Lang, maybe even Mike Warren, who rushed for over 1,000 yards his freshman year of 2015.
So let's get to the offensive line. Iowa State's offensive line has been up and down this year. Who on it is a guy we should keep an eye on, and what is going on with that offensive line?
And a guy you should keep an eye on was the starting left tackle for my high school football team, Colin Newell. He's the starting center these days. And he's getting good snaps. He's being consistent, and he's really impressing me as a freshman. Most of the wide right guys felt that our offensive line was going to be a question coming into this year. And I know guys like Meeker, Good Jones, who else do we have on here? Kniffle. Kniffle's another really good guy to look for, probably even better than Newell. Just wanted to give an Ames High shout out. But yeah, Kniffle and Newell are probably the best people on our offensive line, and I think they'll do okay. I always hope for the best.
So what's the weakness of that offensive line? Where can Texas attack? Where have other teams attacked that offensive line, and what has been proven to be a weakness for them?
If they get rattled early, our offensive line, that will lead to more mistakes and Purdy on JLK Royals field more, but you guys don't have Puna Ford anymore, which is kind of exciting.
Yeah, you're not the only people who you're not the only person who has noticed that, and it's interesting you noticed that before guys like Malik Jefferson, who had a big game, and Deshaun Elliott, who even had an interception last year in Ames. It's that you noticed Puna Ford, and that's kind of the drum I've been banging for this time, because you see the defense. It's very, you know, stylistically there's a lot of similarity between Texas's defense and Iowa State's defense. And if the defensive line, when there's only three of them, if they can't do, you know, above average, I guess you want to say, it's tough for that system to work. So you've definitely noted an issue before we get in earnest into defense. That's definitely one thing that I'm glad you brought up and saw that, you know, hey, that 95 isn't there anymore.
Yeah, he reminded me of like a human bowling ball almost.
Yeah, short, stout, and we'll run you over. But
yeah,
if you were Todd Orlando right now this week, and you're looking at this Iowa State offense, how would you game plan to stop Iowa State?
I would just hope that the defensive backs can hold their own. I see that there's some injuries in the secondary. I can't name names because I don't have it in front of me. But I would just try to lock down on Butler and I don't know, try to blitz a safety every now and again to make things interesting.
With as far as Torrance Orlando goes, it's kind of been not rotating. I won't say a rotating door, but his decision on what main corner guards the main wide receiver has kind of varied throughout this year. Some weeks it's been Chris Boyd. Some weeks it's been Devontae Davis. And sometimes it just kind of depends on the situation. You'll probably see Chris Boyd, who has a very up and down relationship with a lot of Texas fans. Most of the Texas fan base probably be the guy that they want on him. If not, Chris Boyd does a really good job of shutting down secondary options and leaving, you know, they usually try to double cover big receivers and big targets like that with two guys. But like you mentioned, have those injuries. Brandon Jones is definitely a difference maker in the secondary. He is way more adept in space, I think, than I know than PJ Locke. Josh Thompson, who's more of a cover nickel, won't be playing, and he's got great athleticism, so that'll be tough on those speedy slot receivers. So, yeah, I think that, you know, possibly having to double Hakeem Butler and hoping for the, you know, or yeah, and the double Hakeem Butler with guys like Devontae Davis and a second safety over the top, and then hoping Chris Boyd can lock down the second option, who you said are quality, might be in their best interest. We'll see what happens with the linebackers, because that's been a weak point, especially if they only run two on the field, especially against David Montgomery, especially against a mobile quarterback like this, and especially if they have to make plays that have to deal with reaction, like against the pump fake. That's not been their strong suit. I think it's probably a little bit more. I think if you're Todd Orlando, you want to make sure your linebackers are as best prepared as they've been all year against this offense. And that, you know, we like to say it's easier said than done, but when you're facing a style that's so similar, that tries to do so many of the same things, that should be a little bit easier this week compared to other weeks.
Yeah, I agree with that on taking care of the passing game with getting Hakeem Butler taken care of. That is something that you really need to do, is double him. I would like to see Devontae Davis bracketing alongside either Stearns or hopefully Brandon Jones or whoever's back there on top of Hakeem Butler. And if you do that, you have to make Purdy make reads. You keep him bottled up and squeeze. Force him to progress through his reads, because he's a freshman. He's not been doing that all too well this year. So if you can get him to make a read, then you're going to force a turnover, which is so key for Texas's defense. I mean, obviously fans have taken notice of when Texas gets turnovers, they usually win. So that is going to be something that is huge for Texas. But I think to get all this done, you have to start using the lightning package a lot less. Texas has proven that they do not have the personnel this year to do that. They need help up front, and they need to show off the linebackers less. So getting a guy in B linebacker like Malcolm Roach, which is basically a glorified defensive end who can drop back, if you can go into nickel and you do your base defense, I think that's going to help out quite a bit. It'll get a guy who is either all on pass rush or all on run stopping. Let your defensive backs and inside linebackers focus more on the passing game or helping run rather than having them be completely responsible for contain and passing. Otherwise, if you don't do that, then you have to keep a linebacker up close. No more delayed blitzes. They do not have the personnel for that. It is something I will be a broken record on. The delayed blitzes are killing this team, and the stubbornness of keeping on using them, I don't know if that was grammatically correct what I just said, is going to be the downfall of Texas if they do that again here. Let's get to the part of Iowa State that is their bread and butter. And Jared, John Haycock has done, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. He has done an incredible job with the defense for Iowa State. They are one of the top teams in the nation. They are incredible on standard downs. They just do a phenomenal job of being really disciplined. They are very well coached. What are you going to be seeing? What is John Haycock's philosophy, and what are Texas fans going to be seeing out there on the field?
So Texas fans will be seeing our cloud defense, which is kind of a 3-3-5, if I remember correctly. And you will see some fun people on the defensive line, if you don't mind if I start there.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ray Lima, 76. He's a fun person to watch. He's really been coming on strong lately. We don't have our other defensive tackle, Uwazuwerike, who had a hamstring injury on the first play of the Texas Tech game. But it's really fun to watch them. And I wish I knew more defensive terms, but I played on offense when I was in high school. So,
so Jamal Johnson, though, is he a guy who is replacing? Is he a guy who can take up that responsibility, or are y'all missing a key piece?
Yes and no. Johnson really held his own during the Texas Tech game and in concurrent games. He and Ray Lima have bonded well over anime, so I'm just thinking maybe that bond will help them get to Sam Ellinger.
It's an interesting bond. But talk about the defensive ends. Jaquan Bailey is a guy who has had a tremendous year and is a guy who is super explosive. Who else, he and who else, are guys we should keep an eye on, and what makes them so good?
So Jaquan is a really fast pass rusher off the end, and I believe he will soon become the career sacks leader at Iowa State. I actually saw him on campus today. He's a cool dude, really funny. Matt Leo is another one, 6'7", 260-ish, played rugby, I believe, and went to Arizona Western. So he's taking over for Uwazuwerike. Additionally, we have Camilo Tongamoa, who's doing defense and offense this year. Yeah, those are names that I can think of.
So you mentioned the three down front. We touched on it a little bit earlier with how that's kind of affected how effective Texas's defense. Has the three down front for Iowa State done its job this year?
Yeah, it really has. As we're calling it over at Wide Right Night Light, our defense is the Red Wedding for those Game of Thrones fans that are out there.
I love it. That's great.
Thank you. I don't understand the reference because I was Game of Thrones, but I think it's cool.
It's surprising and bloody. So,
yeah,
there you go. I guess that can wrap up defensive tackle. We can kind of move back into the second three. You got good sized guys with Marcel Spears, Mike Rose, and Willie Harvey. But the thing you notice is that middle linebacker, it looks like you see the FR by Mike Rose's name. How has he been able to step in this year as a true freshman and a middle linebacker in this defense and take over that spot?
So the one-time Ball State commit has really solidified his spot by playing what Joel Lanning did last year, who had 20 tackles against you. But yeah, he's just been really solid with his vision and with getting to where he needs to be.
So what exactly do the linebackers do well to make this defense work?
So Marcel Spears is good at getting interceptions. In the past two games against Texas Tech, he's had interceptions for touchdowns. Good at containing the quarterback, too, because if you try to go one way, Willie Harvey might meet you. If you try to go up the middle, Mike Rose will slam you down. If you try to throw it near Spears, he might also intercept it, which is a three-headed horse of yikes.
I'm looking at the depth chart, and I got it pulled up, and you know, you see and nose guard, tackle, and linebacker. I see starred. Would that be more in the linebacker discussion, or should that be in the secondary discussion?
So looking at my game program, I'd say that's more of a secondary discussion with DeMonte Ruth or whoever you see on there,
right,
with the latest depth chart. It's kind of more of that cloud defense that I alluded to. DeMonte sniffs out things pretty well, but he also has work that he could do too.
Don't we all? So you mentioned the strengths of all these different guys that march out and play linebacker. Aside on the defensive line, how has Mike Rose held up this year? Is he, I mean, physically wise, because obviously with his game, he's not starting unless he's doing well. Has he gotten accustomed to the rigors of college football and Power Five?
I believe so. He is, that's his number, 6'3", 228, which is a little small for a linebacker, but I know.
Not in the Big 12.
Okay, well, my bad for thinking things are small. Just trying here. But yeah, he's just really been getting after it game in, game out. And I know he's starting these days, and I think he's just putting in the attitude and effort in practice, which Matt Campbell really preaches on.
So let's move on to the defensive backs here. Brian Peavy is a guy who everybody knows, but who are the names beyond him that we should know in this secondary, and what makes Brian Peavy so good?
So Brian Peavy, Peavy Island, as it might be, he's just really good at making contact. I mean, he's 5'9", but he makes the most of his height and then some. Like, according to Pro Football Focus, again, I think he's the highest-rated cornerback in the country, or at least tied with somebody from Georgia. A name to look out for is our leading tackle, Greg Eilersworth, who was at one time an Ole Miss commit before he went to JUCO. Some other names, DeMonte Ruth, who I alluded to, DeAndre Payne. He's been doing good things, and he is also good at intercepting balls. I think in the two games he played against Will Grier, he had a pick against him in both of them, so that's neat.
Pretty neat, pretty neat. Yeah. But let's get into the how then. So it's probably easier to say than do and how to defeat this defense, but from a guy who watches them every single week, then some, how would you go about trying to take on this defense?
I just honestly try to throw it to Lil Jordan, and I know Sam Ehlinger. If we don't contain Ehlinger, it's going to be a bad day for the Cyclone fans out there.
Is that what has been the weakness? Is that what has been able to, you know, help teams like Oklahoma State or Oklahoma, or I don't know who else has been close to beating Iowa State, allowed them to score as many points as they have?
Yeah, I'm not going to call Ehlinger Kyler Murray, and that's no offense to either player, but Kyler Murray really opened up gaps with his running ability, and I believe Sam can do a similar thing if we're not careful, and both quarterbacks can throw it really well. So we just got to protect and hope. Yeah.
But Taylor Cornelius is definitely no Kyler Murray, but he was a guy.
Now there's Nate Stanley.
Right. Those guys were ones that could really open up the running game through their legs with the quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So one question I have is that I believe either Tim Beck, the offensive coordinator for Texas, or Todd Herman in his Monday press conference, he mentioned that the coverages that Iowa State is presenting this year are a little bit more multiple. Sounds like y'all have expanded what that, you know, drop eight coverage that cloud defense is able to do. Can you expand on that a little bit? What does that look like, being a little bit more multiple in that defense?
I can't expand on it that well. I apologize. But we're rushing some. Obviously, the three down people, Leo, Johnson, and Lima. And we're just clouding back and sometimes rushing a linebacker like a Marcel will come in, or a Mike Rose. And I'm sorry, I can't give a better answer than that.
No worries.
So Joe, if you're Tim Beck or Tom Herman this week, what are your keys to the game, and how are you going to take on this defense?
I think it's like he mentioned, you got to run the quarterback this week. It's been their, Achilles heel. It's been Texas's Achilles heel for often this year, and that's, you know, with a less stout defense this season. And if it's giving the best defense of the Big 12 problems, and you have the personnel like you do and Sam Ehlinger in order to do that, you got to take advantage of it. I think we saw last year what happens if you try and keep the quarterback in the pocket all the time and not really have him try and, you know, go outside and get upfield. It was with how ineffective Shane Buechele was last year in Ames, kind of with the premiere of that defense. You have to take advantage of, you know, even if it's 5-6 yards, just go and slide, because like you mentioned, getting them on Iowa State on standard downs has been really good this year. You got to get out of standard downs. You got to get into those third and short mediums, second and shorts, you know, third and shorts, in order to really have everything opened up and available to you. I think this is a game, you know, last year Sam Ehlinger just took on carry after carry after carry, was the leading rusher for the team. Hasn't been asked to do that this year because of the improvement in the offensive line and with the wide receivers having the season they're having. But this may be a game where you have to ask him to do a lot if because of how effective you know it could possibly be.
You're right. Sam Ehlinger last year was averaging, I think, 22 runs per game. This year it's somewhere around 15 to 18. this is a game where he's going to have to step up and Tom Herman's going to step out of what they've been doing. So, yeah, I completely agree. Allow Sam to run the ball more. Let him use his feet. And really, in the run game, I want to attack the weak side of Iowa State. Iowa State uses that box safety, what Texas knows of the box safety, or more the Joker. He kind of plays over the middle, and what that forces Iowa State to do on the weak side is use a cornerback to protect that weak side of the defense. Exploit that. Use pulling linemen, use run back, wide receiver trap blocks. Exploit the weak side corners with heavy blocking. Make sure that Iowa State feels it with a quarterback zone read or a lead block for the running back. And also, when it comes to Iowa State and this defense, they very similar to Texas, right, where they play to either recognize the run or the pass. If it's a run, you bring eight up. If it's a pass, you drop eight back. So to exploit this here, delayed handoffs and draws will eat this alive, especially draws. Draws will really, really kill it. Iowa State's been actually pretty good against the delayed handoffs because they've been able to recognize the running back and what, you know, it's pretty simple to see the running back is pretty much frozen. Okay, it's a delayed handoff. But for the draws, it's been a little bit more difficult. Again, quarterback runs will be imperative. Going to the passing game side of this, spread them out and find the talent disparities. Texas will have them, especially with little Jordan Humphrey. If they double little Jordan Humphrey, then Jerod Hurd or Malcolm Epps or Devin Duvernay, who has had a breakout past few weeks, will be open somewhere. So quick passes out there or attack their zone. There is always a weak spot in a zone. Sam Ehlinger needs to recognize where it is. The wide receivers need to recognize where it is and sit in it and wait. So I think that can help. But again, with the way Iowa State plays the run or the pass by dropping eight or bringing eight, or, you know, not exactly eight, but something along those lines, true run-pass options. We didn't see that last week against Texas Tech, but that is something that I hope to see from Tom Herman this week, is the true run-pass option to make Iowa State come up and then throw over them, throw behind that middle safety, the middle back safety. I don't know, the star, I think, is what it is. So that is what's going to eat Iowa State, is make them decide, hey, are we run or pass, and then throw it over them. That is my keys to this game here. Run the quarterback, run pass options, make Iowa State make mistakes in the run and pass recognition. So let's end it off here. Jared, what is your prediction for this game?
My prediction is this game is going to look a lot like the 2014 game, where it was like 48-45 or whatever, I believe. But teams are going to be flipped, and it's going to be like 37-31 Cyclones.
All right. All right. Joe, what do you think?
So I'm looking at my preseason predictions right now, and I'm looking ahead. I'm going to go ahead and pencil in a win against Kansas, which will put Texas at 8-3. Texas is 7-3 right now. A win against Kansas would make them 9-3. My regular season prediction was 9-3, and in order to get there, they have to beat Iowa State. So it's in order to keep with my regular season prediction that I made before Maryland, I'm going to have to predict Texas to win this one. But this is going to be a really weird game. I think you're going to see some weird defensive lapses by both teams, whether it's a long quarterback run for Texas or a gash up the middle by second half David Montgomery. I think you'll also end up seeing a mistake in the secondary that allows Butler to get another big play and another touchdown. I think you'll see this team do some out of character stuff. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but something tells me that the turnover-less streak that Sam Ehlinger has had this season may not continue when he's passing into lanes that have eight people trying to guard it. But I still have to predict a win. Heck, I think this game still has like a funky score too. I bet it's like 33-26 or something like that, because I can see both these teams making several stops in the red zone and forcing field goals.
Yeah, I completely agree. Or it's going to be a funky game. I think the score won't be crazy funky, but I agree. It's going to be a weird game because for Texas, this is the first defense they faced all year long that's actually pretty darn stout. So that's going to be interesting. But also for the defense, this offense isn't as crazy good as what they have faced against Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech, which are all like top 25 offenses. So it's going to be an interesting balance of, all right, our defense is going to look better, but the offense is going to look a little poor. So I'm expecting something along the lines of 27-21 or 24-17 Iowa State, because that's my thing. I pick against Texas. So that's my idea for this game. Is it's going to be sort of around 48 points, 47 points, and I think Iowa State ekes it out with a touchdown. It's really going to be who comes out in the first quarter and explodes, because if Texas can get to a comfortable lead or at least, you know, get the first score against Iowa State while they don't have David Montgomery, then I feel good about Texas's chances. But if they come out and start to prod and poke and play tentative with the runs, Iowa State's going to eat that up, and Texas is going to get nowhere on offense fast, and we're going to get to the second half, and Iowa State's going to still be in this game, and I don't feel good about Texas closing it out. So that's how I feel about this game. Jared, again, thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been a pleasure getting to know you, but where can everybody else find you so that they can get to know you better?
So if anybody wants to get at me, literally, at Jar, J-A-R, underscore L-A-R on all the social medias, Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter. And if they want to see what my website's coming out with, well, it's not my website, but what the website that I write for is coming out with, wideright90light.com. Every Thursday I'm coming out with a piece, a classic game and cycle in history. If you want to know more about our history in any sport, and if you just want to see what we're up to, we're a fun bunch of guys.
Yeah, Wide Right 90 Light is a great friend of the show, so it's awesome having you on here. What's up, Joe?
And then just to reiterate, because we always get this question, I feel like you get this question all the time, the name of the website came from a deciding field goal in an Iowa game, and B, an assistant or head coach caught in a picture with a 30 rack of Natty Light, correct?
None of the above, actually.
Ah, dang it.
So we actually make field goals at the end of Iowa ISU games, thanks Cole Netton and Brett Culbertson. But the wide right part is a two-part or three-parter. The first part was a missed field goal against Alabama in the 2001 Independence Bowl, which he still feels really bad about. And the other two parts are two missed field goals that would have sent us to the Big 12 title game in 04 and 05 from like 30 or less yards. And the Natty Light part, so Coach Eustace, I'm not sure how much you guys have followed basketball. Back when he was a coach here, had some Natty Light at a Missouri co-ed party after losing to Kansas State, I believe. And yeah, just pictures made the Des Moines Register. He got fired soon after. Wide Right Natty Light was born.
Fun stuff. But again, Jared, thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. Nice to meet you guys. Enjoy the game. You too.
Love those guys up there in Iowa State running the Wide Right Natty Light. Guys have a great sense of humor, know what they're talking about. Really good stuff. But Joe, this game, everybody knows this is probably the season-defining game for Texas. So let's go ahead and ask the question. How do you feel about this season if Texas wins? And how do you feel about this season if Texas loses?
If Texas wins, this is great. They are literally right where Herman has said publicly he expects to be. I know, you know, privately and in the future, maybe he wants to be a little bit better. But he has put such an emphasis on publicly saying we want to be in the thick of the Big 12 title hunt in the months of November and December. If you win this game, that you will continue to be there. If you lose this game, you're not there anymore. You will have failed to be, you know, you won't be in contention anymore. You will not have reached your goal. That said, you will still be at 7 wins, 7-4. You will likely head into Kansas, another win at 8-4, a, you know, 2-game improvement over the regular season last year, which may not be
way better than they've done in the past.
Right.
Since Mac Brown was here.
Which may not be enough for some people, and I can see that line of thinking. But then you can get to 9 with the you can get to 9 with the bowl. And 9-4 looks pretty darn good, considering the past, you know, however many years it's been since they've touched that. I think I was, you know, that was 2012, my freshman year, when they were 9-4, if I remember correctly, or in the 9-win range. So it's you know, the season's definitely a lot better with a win. It's fine. It'll be another win over a, you know, pretty well-regarded opponent. Oklahoma is their only win right now. It's kind of worth a crap. USC is sputtered. TCU still has a good defense, but hasn't gotten together on offense. They lost to West Virginia. That was a chance. They lost to Oklahoma State. That's a tough loss to take. This will be a win over a, you know, a team right, literally right behind them. And, you know, a fundamentally sound team that's, it's good in a lot of the things it does. So this is its chance to prove not only to people around the country that, you know, Texas is much improved this year, on track for 9 wins and playing at a chance for 10 in a and possibly even a conference title. This is a chance to, you know, the difference in winning and losing here nationally perception wise, which I know only matters very little, is, you know, there's a lot on the line here.
Yeah, I'm saying there's a lot on the line here is a little bit of an understatement. I think most of the entire season is on the line here, especially with the loss to Oklahoma State. This is the game to make it up. If you win this game, Oklahoma State is almost forgiven, especially if Oklahoma State can go and beat West Virginia or West Virginia can beat Oklahoma. Losing to West Virginia, okay, that's a toss-up game right there. Texas was so close, but it just didn't happen. If Texas can beat Iowa State, then it's like you said, almost basically a 9-win season, a possibility for a double-digit win season. That is huge in Tom Herman's second year. It's going to boost the program tremendously, and it spells greatness for the future. If Texas loses this game, then the Oklahoma State game comes back to haunt you more. The Maryland game comes back to haunt you even more. And it kind of leaves you up with some questions of, you know, what's going on in certain positions and certain players. You know, this is the year to do all this. Next year is going to be very difficult on the defense side of the ball when you're losing basically your entire defensive line, your entire linebacking core, and your 2 cornerbacks. That's going to be difficult to rebuild from. I mean, it's going to be a rebuilding year next year for sure. So this is the year to make it to 10 wins. To do that, you have to beat Iowa State. Otherwise, it's a little bit of a letdown this season because, you know, coming from beating Oklahoma, you see the potential this team has. You've seen it. But can they live up to it by beating Iowa State? We'll see. But if they don't, then we know that they haven't.
I know Tom Herman doesn't like to put added pressure on his team. He just likes to, you know, emphasize winning the week ahead of you, but this is one for fans where there's a lot on the line on Longhorn Network, baby.
Yeah. If Tom Herman doesn't win this game, he's going to feel some pressure online, on his job. He's just going to have to, you know, next year's going to be ever more important, and he doesn't look great next year. So this is the year that he needs for himself to buy some wiggle room. So when next year comes along and Texas fans are hyping themselves up and saying, yeah, the defense is going to come back and, you know, look like they did 2 years ago. And the offense, oh, my God, we have Sam Ehlinger and Devin Duvernay and whoever else is coming back. Next year is probably not going to – it's probably not going to be as good as this year. So he needs to buy his wiggle room now or else it's going to be a long road for Tom Herman next year. And Texas fans are going to have to – buckle up for some interesting drama, perhaps.
I think that's a big perhaps. That's a ways to look ahead.
Yeah, I will say I'm looking really, really far ahead here. but this is what it all sets up for. I mean, this game is huge because of the implications going forward in the future. It's almost a program-defining game here, so it's pretty huge. It's a big game for Texas. It's definitely as big as the Oklahoma game for sure, because Texas has made it that way by losing to Oklahoma State and by losing to West Virginia. They've made this Iowa State game the must-win game. So, Joe, do you have any more thoughts on this?
No, just Cliff Kingsbury is below average still. Hadn't changed.
So from the beginning of the show to the end of the show, we'll end it off that way. Thank y'all for listening to us. This has been 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me online at InsideTexas.com. You can also find me on Twitter at JosephCook89.
Or you guys can find both of us in our other shows on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Twitter, Facebook. Wherever you guys can find a podcast, you will find the Hornscast. Please, please, please give us a review and let us know what you think of the show on Twitter or on iTunes or wherever. It really would help us out. On that note, though, thank you all for listening, and we will see you all next week. Hook 'em.